This is part 11 to Your Life is Their Toy by Emmanuel Josephson from 1948. New York Times denies freedom of press to others. The absurd and dangerous complexion of this censorship of medical advertising is revealed by the recent refusal of the New York Times to accept the advertisement of a popular book on the subject of glaucoma and its medical treatment with Cortin, which was written as part of an educational campaign to prevent blindness. The advertisement was rejected because the AMA objected for political reasons, which will be related presently. Such a censorship as is exercised by the New York Times constitutes suppression of freedom of thought and speech, the danger of which is made apparent by the fact that most important and life-saving discoveries of the past have been refused recognition by organized medicine for many years. Colonel Adler, who is in charge of the Times advertising staff, freely admitted to me that Pasteur's discoveries would have been denied similar advertisement. Well, first of all, Emmanuel Josephson should have read the book Louis Pasteur, the Dreams and the Lies of Louis Pasteur. That'll tell you the truth about Louis Pasteur. So those discoveries are in question. Louis Pasteur's discoveries would have been denied similar advertisement until his views had become recognized by organized medicine. The Times could not plead even a desire to protect the public, for it had publicized the glaucoma discovery in an exact and authoritative manner that had angered and incensed the medical and social service bosses and their censors before it reached its present state of complete submission to their dictates. In view of these facts, the advertising campaign that the New York Times is carrying on in its columns with such slogans as, quote, unbiased, complete, and accurate, unquote, is as amusing as it is questionable, but insists on freedom of press for itself. This incident occurred at the very time that the publishers of the Times and of other newspapers were conducting a vigorous campaign for quote-unquote freedom of the press, which they regarded as being threatened by the child labor bill. But Colonel Adler would not face the insincerity and inconsistency of the attitude of the Times in suppressing the freedom of the press of others while demanding it for themselves. In this respect, the Times follows the reaction pattern of the communazi propagandists. Whenever their propaganda is scotched and checked, they cry that quote-unquote civil liberties are being attacked. But the very basis of their own activities is the destruction of the civil liberties of others. Theirs is the infantile attitude, I do, you no do. Man, that sounds like feminists today. Marxist feminists. Wow. When their professional allies are ousted, as in the case of Bertrand Russell, they cry that, quote-unquote, academic freedom is being destroyed. But the very purpose of their own activities is to destroy the academic freedom of others and to force the acceptance of their propaganda and dogmas, or else. Naturally, whatever they do is holy and in the interest of the quote-unquote masses. As might be expected, the New York Times follows the party line and editorially supports the Bertrand Russell champions and their fellow quote-unquote educator agitators. The fate of an advertisement of this book, which will be submitted to the New York Times as a test, will demonstrate to the reader how, quote, unbiased and complete, unquote, it is. The public is injured by the censorship. Though it is pretended that this censorship is being maintained for the benefit of the public, it is apparent that it serves only to injure them. For, as William Lawrence pointed out to his AMA hosts, delay of publication and acceptance of medical discoveries means misery and suffering for the public. That is the true significance of censorship of medical news. Chapter 6. Testimonials for a Price. The AMA quote-unquote acceptance of food and drugs. A highly lucrative phase of medical business is the drug industry. Quote-unquote Doc Simmons fashioned the entire structure of the AMA to the purpose of gaining a whip hand over the profitable trade. The journal of the AMA, the publication, publicity, and advertising rackets, and the censorship of the press were all designed with an eye to it. And now, today, when we go to see an MD, that's what we get. Drugged. Council on Pharmacy and Chemistry. The device that served to gain the AMA a direct control of the drug trade was the Council on Pharmacy and Chemistry and its, quote, acceptance of food and drugs, unquote. Ostensibly, it was set up for the purpose of investigating and certifying the quality of drugs to the medical profession and to the public. Its activities are virtually the issuance of super testimonials for the manufacturers. Later, other councils were set up to pass on foods and other items. By a series of maneuvers, this testimonial business was converted into a stranglehold on the drug trade. The quote-unquote code of ethics was amended to bar physicians from issuing testimonials so as to give the council a complete monopoly of the business. Advertising in the columns of the AMA journals was barred to products which are not quote-unquote accepted. Competitive medical journals were driven out of business, and the pressure which the AMA could put on drug manufacturers was tremendously increased. Later, the AMA conspired with the publishers of lay newspapers and magazines to bar the advertising of any product that is not quote-unquote accepted. Parenthesis. The Better Business Bureaus participated in this, serving the interests of the AMA, end parenthesis. It thereby established one of the few monopolies in restraint of trade which has not been molested during the past 3 decades. This laid the foundation for an immensely profitable racket. The bulk of the money which flows into the coffers of the AMA or into the pockets of its bosses is derived directly or indirectly from this illicit control over the drug industry. The Council on Pharmacy and Chemistry is a blind behind which the bosses of the AMA act. In its ranks, there are some who are distinguished scientists and others who are not. But the members of the council have little to say about its activities. This is made clear by the recent resignation from the council of the eminent scientist and Nobel Prize winner, Dr. Henry H. Dale, which he indicated was an expression of indignation at the obvious unfairness of the actions of the Council and the AMA. Some scientists who lend their names to dignify the Council are merely its pawns. The, quote, reports of the Council, unquote, are generally merely the mouthings of the bosses of the AMA, of the editor of its journal, and his henchmen. From the very start, the distinguished scientist and teacher, Dr. Frank G. Lydston, undertook a courageous campaign of reform from within the AMA. In a booklet entitled, Why the AMA is Going Backward, he wrote as follows, quote, the achievement of which the oligarchy of the AMA has boasted most vociferously has been its belated war on proprietaries, quack medicine manufacturers, and impure food producers. When one recalls the nauseous array of proprietary fakes on the advertisements of which the oligarchy built its financial prosperity, its holier-than-thou pose is sickening. It was fitting to its psychic constitution that after the AMA has for years done its level best to promulgate the interests and to fatten up fake manufacturers and professional poisoners of the innocent, it should bite the hand that fed it. Despotic powers such as the oligarchy wields over the drug and food manufacturers is dangerous, and human nature being what it is, that power might be expected sooner or later to be abused, unquote. Professor Lydston was as wise as he was courageous. Subsequent events bear out fully how sage was his judgment of the character of the men who dominated the AMA when he suspected that the reform which they pretended to adopt would merely be used by them as a cloak to cover more nefarious activities. Considerations for quote-unquote acceptance. An amusing tale is told about the early days of the quote-unquote acceptance racket that amply supports Dr. Lydston's statements. Dr. W.C. Abbott, it is reported, became enraged at the rejection by the AMA of all the products of his firm. It was threatening his ruin. Realizing that quote-unquote Doc Simmons really was the counsel, Dr. Abbott sent an assistant of his to Lincoln, Nebraska, to dig up some information that might make the Doc more amenable to reason. The investigator brought to Abbott full evidence of all the malodorous activities of quote-unquote Doc Simmons. Dr. Abbott also secured affidavits regarding some operations performed by quote-unquote Doc Simmons in Chicago and confronted him with these data. Upon viewing it, Simmons is reported to have looked up and asked, quote, what do you want, unquote. Abbott is said to have replied, quote, I want all the products of my firm accepted, unquote. It is a matter of record that the Abbott products were quote-unquote accepted by the AMA thereafter. The history of the AMA's quote-unquote seal of acceptance is replete with betrayals of professional and public trust. drug products of the highest value have been rejected of their acceptance, or their acceptance unwarrantedly delayed. Worthless, dangerous, or deadly drugs and foods have been hastily accepted. And sometimes the journals of the AMA have all the more heavily advertised drugs that the council has pronounced to be worthless. Delayed, quote-unquote, acceptance or rejection of valuable drugs are responsible for much human misery and loss of life. Some such instances, which are illustrative of numerous others, will be recounted. Cod liver oil rejected, a most ludicrous demonstration of the pretended omniscience of the AMA, which assumes that what they do not know or do not believe is not true, is the case of cod liver oil. Intelligent observation interpreted by common sense has led many generations of plain folks to realize the value of cod liver oil as a medicine for the prevention and cure of rickets and of other conditions. Quote-unquote scientific medicine propounded by the quote-unquote leaders of medicine, who were so purblind in their dogmatic ignorance that they could not see the obvious, denied any value to the quote-unquote quack nostrum cod liver oil. And boy, do we ever have a lot of that today. Every time an MD scoffs at something a naturopath or a homeopath comes up with. Wow. Or an herbalist. Continuing. In the second decade of this century, however, some intrepid European physicians, daring to tread on unsanctioned... Boy, that mockingbird is loud in the background. Daring to tread on unsanctioned ground, undertook to evaluate the folk remedy. Verification of the value of cod liver oil in medical treatment brought, of course, derisive editorials and attacks upon this work from the quote-unquote leaders of the American Medical Association. By 1920, there had been completely confirmed by ponderous, dull-witted researches what many a generation of housewives had known from plain observation and common-sense interpretation. The AMA politicos were forced to retreat by the sheer weight of evidence. Cod liver oil was grudgingly, quote-unquote, accepted by the association and its, quote-unquote, omniscient counsel and editor. Until then, the AMA had barred the advertisement of the product to its reader physicians and had attacked its use vigorously as a, quote, putrid oil of no greater value than any other fatty oil, unquote. Until then, the blind trust of the public and of its medical advisors in the reliability of the association and its counsel deprived a multitude of children who were under quote-unquote regular and quote-unquote scientific medical guidance of the benefits of cod liver oil and its vitamins. Few people can now fail to appreciate the falseness and absurdity of the actions of the AMA and its council, which denied that cod liver oil had any medicinal value. Less readily appreciated by the public are the numerous similar actions by the association which each year bar from advertisement and public use invaluable and life-saving drugs. Delayed sulfanilamide, quote-unquote, acceptance forced. Sulfanilamide was taboo to the American Medical Association journals and their medical readers for over 2 years after its unique value had been recognized and broadcast in the American Medical Journals. Failure of quote-unquote acceptance of the drug by the AMA Council served to bar its advertisement in the U.S. And in sharp contrast with other instances which will be mentioned shortly, no mention without quote-unquote acceptance was made. As a consequence of this act, which is characteristic of the arbitrary and monopolistic control of medical publication and medical advertising by the American Medical Association and its editor, numerous victims of the deadly disease Streptococcus septicemia, popularly known as blood poisoning, were left to die. They died as sacrifices to medical rackets because their physicians were prevented by the association from timely access to knowledge of the value of sulfanilamide, which alone might have saved their lives. After a member of the Roosevelt family was successfully treated with sulfanilamide by a physician sufficiently favored by the AMA to be given the knowledge and use of the drug by its American distributor, the news and information about the drug was published in every newspaper in the country. In this manner, through the newspapers, the bulk of the medical profession first became acquainted with the drug, and thousands of victims of an almost hopelessly fatal disease were given a forlorn chance to live that the AMA acceptance and advertising racket had granted previously only to a chosen few. Fishbein strikes back. This incident probably upset many calculations and possibilities of profit for the inner ring of the AMA. It also robbed Fishbein and his associates of the opportunity to bask in the spotlight of newspaper publicity. He recaptured the opportunity by immediately issuing exaggerated warnings of danger of the drug and by an attack on the drug firm that had made the product available to the American public. Evidence of the value of sulfanilamide was voluminous. It piled up so rapidly that Fishbein lost face in his attacks on the drug and on the house which marketed it. The AMA Council on Pharmacy and Chemistry found itself forced by honest publicity to promptly, quote-unquote, accept the product. This incident rankled the powers that be of the AMA deeply. In October 1937, there appeared on the market the preparation of a solution of sulfanilamide in an extremely poisonous solvent, diethylene glycol. It was announced absolutely untruly by the United Press, with which Fishbein was identified, that the poisonous product which caused numerous deaths was prontolin, the Winthrop and Company trademark for sulfanilamide. This accusation was promptly retracted when the firm of Winthrop and Company protested its falsity, but the damage to the firm that was regarded as, quote, kicking over the traces, unquote, and breaching testimonial and advertising discipline had been inflicted with a severity designed to discourage any other manufacturers from revolting. Subsequently, every avenue of publicity was utilized by Fishbein to broadcast that the poisonous nature of the, quote, elixir sulfanilamide, unquote, was attributed to the glycol solvent. He did not relate, however, that a more poisonous glycol solvent had been, quote-unquote, accepted by the council and the AMA and introduced into medicine with their sanction as a preservative and solvent in drug preparations intended for injection into the body. That, according to New and Non-Official Remedies, 1935, page 132, and 1937, page 116. Nor did he relate that the current issues of the AMA journals were carrying advertisements stimulating the use of these glycol-bearing products. Nor did he point out that since the AMA and its council had endorsed the introduction of the glycols in medical preparations, the deaths due to the glycol solvent in elixir sulfanilamide could be blamed partly on the AMA and himself. This situation may have some bearing on the reason why the Food and Drug Administration, whose duty it was to warn the public and to act in this crisis, permitted Fishbein to supersede it. This is not an isolated or rare instance of the practice of the association and its editor of brazenly pointing the finger of accusation at others for jeopardizing human life by a procedure or preparation which it has accepted. Another such case, radium drinking water, will be related. For subsequent quote-unquote good behavior, Winthrop and Company was prominently mentioned in the November 1939 United Press reports of the granting to Dr. Domach of a Nobel Prize for the discovery of the value of sulfanilamide. The dispatch stated that the doctor had received the prize for the discovery of Winthrop's trademark product, Prontosil. And this concludes part 11 of Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine, by Dr. Emmanuel Josephson, from 1948.